time now for Inside the Huddle on WILO, hosted by Ken Hartman. This program will focus on area schools and all the sports they have to offer. Ken will speak with coaches and players across the region. Your participation is encouraged. Call now at 659-3338 to discuss local or statewide sports. Inside the Huddle is brought to you by Tony Theofanis, State Farm Insurance, and Susan Casper, State Farm Insurance in Frankfort. Now here's your host, Ken Hartman.
Good Saturday morning to you, and welcome to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm Insurance agents, Susan Casper and Tony Theofanis. I am your host, Ken Hartman. This week's show is going to center on the effect the coronavirus has had on high school athletics outside of the state of Indiana, as well as college basketball. We'll be talking at 9:15 today with Ohio Athletic Association Executive Director Jerry Snodgrass. 9:30, we're going to have IUK over Kokomo head men's basketball coach Eric Eckelbarger on. Then at 9:45, we're going to talk with Iowa High School Athletic Association Executive Director Tom Keating. And by the way, they have started sports back up in Iowa, so that's the reason we want to talk with Tom this morning. So it should be a very interesting show this morning. As always, we appreciate any comments or questions, 659-3338 and 1-800-447-4463. In light of what took place late yesterday, I was going to try to avoid this as much as possible, not because I'm afraid of it, just because I just didn't think it was a proper topic for this type of show. But we're going to get into this a little bit this morning. But after I do say this, the NBA is going to be back, and they're going to be playing here starting in August, and they hope to have their champion crown by October the 12th, I think it is. So anyway, back to the main topic of what's been going on. And that's the comments from the black football players, comments by Drew Brees, comments by Donald Trump. Last night, Brees, in a message addressed to President Donald Trump, he stood by his apology for earlier comments on disrespecting the flag after Trump wrote that the New Orleans Saints quarterback should not have changed his stance. Brees was following up on his pledge to be an ally for the black community in their fight against racial equality and social justice. Quote here from Brees, through my ongoing conversation with friends, teammates, and leaders of the black community, I realize this is not an issue about the American flag. It never has been. We can no longer use a flag to turn people away or distract them from the real issues that face our black communities. We did it back in 2017, and regretfully I brought it back up with my comments this week. We must stop talking about the flag, shift our attention to the real issues of systematic racial injustice, economic oppression, police brutality, and judicial and prison reform. We're at a critical juncture in our nation's history. If not now, then when? Brees goes on. He says, we as a white community need to listen and learn from the pain and suffering of our black communities. We must acknowledge the problems, identify the solutions, and then put this into action. The black community cannot do it alone. This will require all of us. Brees' statement came about 6 hours after Trump said Brees should, quote, not have taken back his original stance on honoring our magnificent American flag. Old glory is to be revered, cherished, and flown high. Trump wrote in a pair of tweets, we should be standing up straight and tall, ideally with a salute and our hand on our heart. There are no things that could protest, but not our great American flag. No kneeling. Roger Goodell from the NFL commissioner last night. Really, his comments are kind of what started this whole thing last night, not prior to, but in a video message last night, the NFL commissioner, he responded this accordingly after a video released by Thursday night by a collection of NFL stars, including Michael Thomas, Patrick Mahomes, and Deshaun Watson. Goodell's video included three specific statements of the players. Video asked on Thursday, asked the NFL to make it about racism, social injustice, and peaceful protests. This is from Goodell. We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players and encourage all its players to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe that black lives matter. Then there's a little thing here that says, why does this matter? Because the streets of America have, for the past 11 nights, been lined with protesters speaking out in the wake of deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery. Because the past week in the NFL has seen virtual team meetings ignore football and focus on considerably broader world issues. Because the faces and voices speaking out against the issues were the center of Colin Kaepernick's protest back in 2016, look and sound different than the ones that we who back at this time. This is a very interesting quote, and this is not from Breeze or not from Trump. This is from Indianapolis Colts general manager Chris Ballard, and I think this is hits it right on the head. This is not a black problem, Ballard said. He said, this is a white problem. This is an issue that we have to talk about, and we can't sugarcoat it. We cannot go back into our bubble, quote, unquote. That was from Indianapolis Colts GM Chris Ballard. Goodell also went on to say last night that he will begin connecting with the players who are making their voices heard and added, quote, without black players, there would be no National Football League, and the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of black players, coaches, fans, and staff. New Orleans Saints wide receiver Michael Thomas was a key organizer of this video by the players, which he opened with a statement, it's been 10 days since George Floyd was brutally murdered. The players then took turns asking the question, what if I was George Floyd? The video closed with the players insisting that they will not be silenced. And after Goodell's video, Thomas tweeted, quote, well said, Roger. Led by former San Francisco 49er quarterback Colin Kaepernick, some NFL players began kneeling during the anthem in 2016 to call attention to racial injustice. The demonstration prompted a caustic national debate, with NFL owners taking the side of those who thought the players would stand during the anthem because it was perceived as being a sign of disrespect to the flag. The players insisted the demonstrations were not about the flag at all, nor a statement of their patriotism, but grew angry with that the original point was lost amid the question of the flag. Kaepernick was never offered a contract after the 49ers released him following the 2016 season, and he settled a collusion claim with the league in 2019. That's been the whole problem, what was just said. The fact that the, you know, everybody thinks this is an attack on the flag, it isn't. It's just their way of saying, you know, we need help, and we got some issues we have to take care of. So this is going to be an ongoing situation for quite a little while. And I honestly think, you know, particularly last night, I was very proud of Drew Brees, even though he kind of messed up earlier, but he, you know, he made amends by apologizing. And the thing of it is also, Donald Trump has no business, I mean none, being involved in this. He just needs to try to run the country, take care of the problems that he can take care of, leave the NFL to the people who are in charge, and same goes true for anybody who gets involved like that. So I applaud Drew Brees for what he said late last night to Donald Trump. On another little situation that took place yesterday, and this is going to be another interesting thing that's going to have to be followed as well. The NCAA Committee on Infractions yesterday placed Oklahoma State men's basketball program on 3 years of probation and banned the Cowboys from playing in postseason tournaments next season. The penalties are the result of a Level 1 violation involving former associate head coach Lamont Evans, who was sentenced in June of 2019 to 3 months in prison for accepting between $18,150 and $22,000 in bribes to steer players from South Carolina and Oklahoma State to certain agents and financial advisors. The NCAA also hit Evans with a 10-year show cause penalty during that period. Any NCAA member employing him must restrict him from athletic or related duties unless it shows cause for why those restrictions should not apply. NCAA also reduced Oklahoma State men's basketball scholarships by three during the 2021 season through 2022 and 23 academic years and imposed other recruiting restrictions. The Cowboys had previously imposed a $10,000 fine plus 1% of its men's basketball operating budget and reduced the number of official visits for 3 years. But this may be the tip of the iceberg on part of this, because during that investigation 2-3 years ago, we also should go back and say the NCAA has been widely inconsistent when it comes to the cases it pursues and how it punishes violators of those rules. So consider that fact noted. Nothing is ever guaranteed. Precedents set do not often matter. But that said, it's impossible to digest what just happened to Oklahoma State and feel good about things if you're connected to Kansas or South Carolina or TCU or North Carolina State or USC or Arizona or LSU or Auburn or Louisville or Creighton or Alabama, all of which had staff members exposed as rule breakers by the FBI. I mean, if Oklahoma State gets hit hard with one level one violation committed by a person hit fine within hours of the transgression being made public, even after the school, according to NCAA, cooperated completely, what is going to mean for these other schools? The reason this gets brought up is because Kansas was investigated. It has not one level one violation. It has five level one investigations. So if Oklahoma State gets smacked with this one, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. When the situation comes down for Kansas and all these other people who are in this situation, it's going to be extremely interesting to see what happens when this all comes out. I wanted to reach around here and get one more thing before we go to try and take a break and get to our first guest. It appears as though Major League Baseball really is not going to get it right for a long time. They are not anywhere close to an agreement, which you would think they would be willing to do. But Jeff Passan from ESPN wrote a very good article yesterday. And he's got a couple things here of why this should be taken care of. He goes, first, we must start with two true premises. One, MLB is willing to pay players for a full prorated share of their salaries over a 48-game season. The MLPA is willing to play an 82-game season with a full prorated share of players' salaries. Okay, they've got that part out there. The other point is vital to explain how a deal can come together. One, if teams were to pay players a full prorated portion of their salaries, it would cost around $1,674,800 per game. The union and league both accept that figure. Two, in a financial statement that Major League Baseball provided to the union, the league suggests that every game would generate $980,000 in local television revenue. Over the course of a 162-game season, that would total $381,400,000 in a 48-game season that amounts to $705,600,000,000 in local TV revenue. For 82 games, it goes up. He goes on for that. What the union disputes Major League Baseball's accounting is a number of areas and rightly points to local TV revenue numbers, who do not include teams' value ownership stakes in their regional sports network. It is generally believed that the local actual TV is more in the $2.4 billion range. So that's part of that. The other thing that kind of gets into this is that the per game loss is an important number because it gives a sense of what owners are willing to lose in one and game day revenue put on a season. The league says 40% of its revenue comes from tickets, concessions, parking, and other game day purchases. Other estimates depict the number slightly lower. Because the league plans to play games without fans in stadiums due to the coronavirus concerns, a significant portion of the standard's revenue vanishes when this basis is for the owner's arguments that are better off playing fewer games. Still, a 48-game schedule would leave a 720-game season, and MLB's self-reported loss of $640,000 per game. A 48-game season means the league would be willing to lose $640,800,000. So this is going to be going on for quite a little while, and it's going to be interesting to see if this ever gets taken care of. So we'll just have to see. We're going to go ahead and take a break now and try and get our first guest on the line. You're listening to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm insurance agents, Susan Casper and Tony Theofanis.
State Farm agents are one of a kind. They understand insurance and share a genuine concern for others. State Farm agent Susan Casper works very hard every day to help people find the right products for their insurance and financial needs. From homeowners and renters to retirement planning, please call Susan Casper today to talk about which products are best for you. Get to a better state. State Farm.
Hi, Doug.
Hello, Roy.
Did you hear about what they're going to be doing at Slabby's on June 6th?
It's going to be a great Saturday. I hear Joyful Bubbles is going to be there from noon to 6. Now, is it business as usual at the restaurant, though?
Oh, yeah. I'm still going to be able to get my rose relish chock full of garlic.
That's great. I'm going to go over and enjoy the bubbles so you'll stop breathing on me, Roy.
And remember, with Slabby's Food and Freedom, you can eat in, call in, pick up, or get it delivered to you curbside. Slabby's Food and Freedom, 307 North Main Street, just off the square in Frankfurt. Check out Slabby's Food and Freedom on Facebook for more.
Your free local online newspaper, ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, is your number one resource for information as you need it. Right at your fingertips, we have news, weather, sports, obituaries, the WILO program schedule, over 40,000 community photos, online surveys, community events, and WILO TV archives. Plus, click on the info tab to find out how you can contact your local and state representatives. Find out what the buzz is all about. ClintonCountyDailyNews.com.
WILO wants to to hear from you. Let us know your opinion by sending us an email. We now have a sound-off page at ClintonCountyDailyNews.com. Just go to the community page and click on Sound Off to submit your opinion. We've made it easy for you to sound off on the local issues important to you. You can also submit by emailing your opinion to newsroom@casperradio.com. Let us know what's on your mind. One more way we're keeping you connected, WILO.
WILO and Casper Media are members of the exclusive International Broadcasters Idea Bank. Casper Media and 99 other broadcasters from around the world come together to trade ideas on how to better serve our communities and our listeners. A member of the International Broadcasters Idea Bank since 1991, Casper Media has hosted the Idea Bank Convention throughout the years. Casper Media and Idea Bank, constantly working to better serve you. Depend on WILO.
Today we decided to walk to school. At the corner, we waited to cross the street. The stoplight counted down.
15, 14, 31.
We took a left on Carroll Garden Street. Loud music was coming from a car. Danny's a smart kid, but he gets so distracted.
There were so many other sounds, I didn't know what to focus on.
Danny, Earth to Danny. Suddenly he realized he forgot his homework again.
I left my homework on the table.
At the school steps, we held goodbye. I really hope he doesn't have another bad day at school today.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free online resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Get personalized recommendations, practical tips, daily access to experts, and more. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm insurance agents, Susan Casper and Tony Theofanis. I'm your host, Ken Hartman. As we said, the topic of the show today is just how the coronavirus is affecting states outside of the state of Indiana as well. We're going to have a little segment on college basketball here shortly. We're being joined by Ohio High School Athletic Association Executive Director Jerry Snodgrass. Jerry, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, you know, and every day, like everybody else in every state, we're trying to get through this and move forward. So thank you for having me on.
Not a problem. I mean, we have had both Bobby Cox on, and he's going to retire next month, and or I should say in August. And then, of course, we've had Paul Knighting on, who's his replacement. And we just kind of wanted to get a feel for what everybody else is doing. So what, you know, first of all, what all did you guys lose last year?
Well, we lost, you know, everything came to light pretty much around the nation on March 10th, Tuesday. And at that time, we were in the middle of our regional, boys basketball tournament. And that is, I think, equivalent to the semi-states. I'm not sure in Indiana, but anyhow, it's our final 16 in our regional boys tournament. So we had, with four divisions, you know, we had all these sites going on, 16 different, actually about 18 different sites going on. And those are huge attendance issues for us. We were heading it into our girls state basketball tournament, and ironically, in a throwback year where we were playing at the nostalgic, historic St. John Arena at Ohio State, and our state wrestling tournament, which is huge in Ohio, and our state ice hockey championship. So we lost all of that. We put it on hold, and then, of course, we went into the spring and went as long as we could and lost that. So not only did we lose the sports, we lost over $2 million of our revenue. So, you know, that brings us to today, I guess.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is now, and also, you know, of course, the thing of it is, do you think you're going to be able to start on time? That seems to be the key for everybody. I know the Indiana Department of Education put out a 38-page memo yesterday on how it should reopen. Has your people over in Ohio done that yet? And if so, what did that thing basically say?
Yeah, they have not put out, our state has not put out, you know, any document yet to do that. And again, this is very, very changing. In the state of Ohio, for the most part, and I think a lot of people, I'm assuming Indiana is the exact same way, this isn't Jerry Snodgrass, the executive director of the OHSA, making the decisions on whether we will open school or open sports. We would like to, but in this emergency, you know, these are all under governmental orders at this point, and in Ohio, as with a lot of states, under the direction of the director of the State Department of Health. So these regulations, rules, permissions are coming out from them. But what's really transpired in the last few weeks is a phased-in reopening. Almost every day, the governor is announcing something. Yesterday, the governor announced that amusement parks, and of course in Ohio, that's a big thing with Cedar Point, Kings Island, and a few others, are going to be permitted to open. I believe it's on June 18th or 19th, somewhere around in there. Certain other water parks may open. There's been this phased-in approach of things, and the governor has issued, and the State Department of Health has issued, required or mandated restrictions and recommended restrictions. So given all that, I think we are in a very good place right now to start school and to start sports. I think for all states and all levels of sports, the number one issue remains, you know, what we do with the mass gatherings, meaning the fans. So I'm confident we will start. We've phased in what our athletic programs are able to do, and I think now we're going to be faced with what do we do with fans.
With the coronavirus being a contact, supposedly a contact disease, and football and basketball and, you know, wrestling and a lot of sports being contact sports, how do you best try to protect the kids that are going to be involved?
Yeah, and I think that if you look, I mean, in a couple of different things, especially from the CDC guidelines, but, you know, mainly it goes just a little bit beyond the contact aspect in that the number one issue and the number one thing that our governor has issued and the State Department of Health on mandated restrictions are to protect the respiratory droplet. And, you know, that's why we see the requirements of masks and so on and so forth. But, you know, so it's going to be very difficult to do that. However, most of that is going to be contained, the belief is going to be contained by checking symptoms prior to. That includes everything from temperature checks. Our athletes in the state of Ohio right now, even though they're not under school jurisdiction, right, excuse me, school or our jurisdiction, because we're in the off season, but our schools are permitted to have functions right now, primarily skill training and conditioning, but that protection is done by, right now, social distancing, which is not possible in football and most other sports. However, even what they are doing is temperature checks, attendance taking, so tracing can be done, symptoms being recorded or asked at least every single day when they show up. So those are the regulations, I think, that are going to be in place for a sport. And I don't think right now our governor has not really distinguished so much that the contact physically is going to be a whole lot different than the social distancing. Keeping in mind that take a football team that you put on a school bus or multiple school buses, the belief has become that in a, I'll call it a tribal viewpoint of it, that these people are around each other all the time. So the fact that they contact each other isn't a problem. The challenge is we play interscholastic sports, one community from another community. And that's yet to be resolved. I think that's going to be a big issue going forward.
You know, the other question I've still got is that how, we'll say everything is fine going in, but what happens if an athlete or athletes get sick during a game? Is there going to be any in-game, like a temperature check or anything like that? Or, you know, I'm just saying, what do you do if somebody gets ill or starts to show signs during a game?
I think, you know, I wish I could have an answer for you. And I think that is probably the number one issue right now of the millions, not millions, but the many, many, many what ifs. What do you do? And I think that's probably impeding a little bit the progress or the forward movement, because those things must be identified. Everything from, by the way, in sports to in a school classroom. And then even for us and for any state, that then goes one step further about, okay, what do you do with your next ball game that in volleyball might be the next day or whatever? You know, is everybody quarantined because you're going to be playing against another community? So those are left to be answered. I wish, I'm a former science teacher, and I sure don't have those answers. So I'm counting on those experts to do.
You know, we were talking earlier about how we're going to handle the fans. I think another thing also is how we're going to handle kids in a classroom and in a school setting, because it's almost impossible to take care of social distancing, because classrooms were never designed to basically have big spaces for kids. They're all basically designed to get as many kids in there as they possibly could.
True. And, you know, I'll go one step further and say, let's extend that age of kids all the way through college students.
Mm-hmm.
And today, University of Toledo in Ohio announced that they would be starting classes a little different schedule, but everything from utilizing classroom space that maybe has been closed off and not used lately to try to keep people social distance. Let's take that down to the lower level. And by the way, just like Indiana, just like Illinois, we have junior high sports. You start talking about a 12-year-old and keeping a mask on all day, if that's the requirement, or keeping them distant. Let's go down into the second grade. And I say that may not be my concern. That might be a brother or sister of one of our kids. So, you know, telling to tell that if masks are a necessity, that's going to be challenging.
And that's the one, that's when the grades you just brought up are the ones I'm suspecting are going to happen, are going to be the hardest ones to do, because they simply don't know each other. They don't know any better right now.
They do not. And try to impress upon them, you know, the importance of all this. And I think all of us go back and, you know, just the misconceptions by young kids. They think old age is 19 or 20. You know what I mean? And they just don't, they don't process the importance of some of those things. And that's really going to challenge, I think, our educators and our administrators.
You know, if 19 or 20 was old age, I'm in trouble.
Me too.
One thing I did want to touch on, you guys have decided to expand your football playoffs in 2021. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yes, and I don't know about other states. I should know this, but we allow our coaches' associations to make presentations to our board of directors. And so they actually made this presentation, and they've wanted that for some time. Where we differ from a lot of states, first of all, we're the third or fourth largest of football playing states. We had, I believe, 721 schools that play varsity football this past year. Of those 721, football is the only sport in our state in which the they're not all schools, not all 721, get into the postseason tournament. Every other sport does.
Yep.
So given that, you know, people have this perception more and more and more, and a good perception of that. So the challenge a little bit in football is starting to surface now in basketball in the state of Ohio, where everybody is in, and we're starting to get blowout scores when, you know, a one seed plays a 16 seed, and we're starting to get 90 and 100-point differentials, even sometimes with a mercy rule. So, you know, there's a fine line with that, and we'll see, because more will be allowed in. We had a number 8 seat. So currently, our state allows 8 into each region, and 4 regions in each of 7 divisions. We had a number 8 seat last year that barely got in by our computer points on the last game, and with a lot of upsets that took place in second-level points, and won the state title. And won the state title convincingly. Public school. So, and that's, winning the state title might be a little odd, but getting wins. We have a number of 8 seeds that beat number 1 seeds, and our computer system, the Harbin ratings, are considered one of the best in the nation. So, you know, it does give rise to believing that more should get in.
Yeah, I know. In Illinois, they still do what you're doing. Over here in Indiana, everybody gets in, which kind of, I've got mixed feelings on, but at least they finally installed a mercy rule over here, which I was very happy that they did. So.
Yeah, and that's true too. We do have a mercy rule, so we have a 30-point differential in the second half,
right.
And it comes into play quite a bit. So, you know, it remains to be seen. The other aspect that people don't like to talk about for any state organization, but we are businesses. We're all not profit businesses, except for a couple states. But, you know, we have to look at the revenue source of that.
That's right.
And history here, this surprises people when I tell them, but in the state of Ohio, in any sport in the last 16 years where we have added a division or increased the playoffs, however you want to look at it, we have lost revenue. When we went from 6 football divisions to 7 football divisions, we lost revenue. So, I mean, history says that. The other aspect that we have in the state of Ohio, unless we can use the Hoosier Dome or one of those, or Lucas Oil Field, we have no indoor facilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as a result of that, we can't really move our playoffs late.
Okay. Jerry, anything else you want to add before I let you go here?
Super.
So, I mean,
I'm sorry. I didn't hear that last
time. I said, is there anything else you want to add before I let you go?
Oh, no, other than, you know, it really emphasizes the all-in-this-together thing when we're trying to bring this back. And I know that you, like everyone today, are really dealing with the societal issues that, you know, with Black Lives Matter and the things like that. And I think, you know, as I put a release out yesterday, one thing about sports, especially high school, they've really taught team members. They don't care about the race, the color, the religion, the sexual orientation of a teammate.
Mm-hmm.
They're concerned about the collective success of the team.
That's right.
And I think that's so critical why we need sports back, but we need them responsibly and safely. So, you know, this other issue, this other crisis that surfaced, it's a huge impact on high school sports, and one that I am thrilled to be part of trying to get all this back.
It's going to be a very interesting next month or so, to say the least.
It sure is. And one, you know, when you asked me from the onset how you were doing, I said, you know, living by the seat of our pants every single day, and that's exactly right.
I think that's what everybody's doing. Jerry, I greatly appreciate your time this morning. Best of luck to you guys in the future, and we'll probably be talking to you a little further down the line, okay?
Thank you very much. I appreciate being on. Thank you, and good luck.
All right, thanks. Take care. That's been Jerry Snodgrass, who's the Ohio High School Athletic Association Executive Director. We're going to take a break right now and get our next guest on. You're listening to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm Insurance agent, Susan Casper, and Tony Theofanis.